Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Cody Brown is one of the TV stars of the show Sister Wives on TLC channel. He actually filed a lawsuit to get the polygamy provision overturned in the Utah Constitution. The first federal judge actually overturned the decision, but it was denied on appeal. We're going to talk to Sally Gordon, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and talk about why she says the federal judge reversed that the original opinion. So check out our conversation. So talk a little bit more about Cody Brown and those court cases. What were the issues involved, and what did the one court rule and the other court decide?
Yeah, so the district court said Reynolds would not be decided the same way today. And the Tenth Circuit reversed. So that's a trial-level federal court, and then the intermediate level, it's called the Court of Appeals, and there are, you know, various circuits. This is the 10th one. I live in Philadelphia. That's the third one. Okay. So the 10th one reversed, and that held up. It did not go to the Supreme Court. My guess is the justices would love not to have to decide a case like that, but I didn't talk to them about it.
Did they try to send it to the Supreme
Court? Yeah, I think there was a cert petition. It's years ago now, but I'm pretty, yeah.
And the Supreme Court said, we don't want to deal with this.
Well, they just deny the cert petition.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are many, many, many thousands of cases that they don't hear. And honestly, the cases that they do hear, there's either of great moment. You're trying to subpoena stuff from the president. That's pretty important. Or there's a developing line of cases where the circuits, meaning those 3rd and 10th and 5th and 7th and 1st, are starting to disagree with each other so that we have conflicting rules out in the country, and it needs to have the Supreme Court step in and resolve it. So that's another. Or there's original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court. When two states sue each other, they start right there, right up in you know, the lawyer's equivalent of, you know, judgment, right? Up there with the court, you know, it is the court. It is the gorilla. Like, you call in the big boys when you go there. And so one thing, I do think there's been substantial movement in marriage. There has not been a commitment to pushing past that boundary of two. And my own sense is that there are a group of people who want to do that and call it marriage, and a larger group, if I'm right, although we don't really have great numbers, but a larger group of people who want to be polyamorous and live in communities that maybe are explicitly not marital and are not exclusive in those ways.
Okay. So I love that you said that the first court...
trial court.
The trial court said... Reynolds would be decided differently.
Yes, a lot of people say that.
Do you agree with that?
Well, so, see, I'm not really sure, in part because we don't have the same situation. We don't have a really coherent and powerful group who can run a system like this. Right? So one of the things that is remarkable about the Mormons is that they, when you think about it, right, with Joseph Smith, you know, saying to Congress, you got to step in. Like, we're being murdered here, and the states are looking the other way. And congressmen just said, we can't. Like, the Constitution literally, you know, there was no mandate for the federal government to do anything to the states about religion. Nothing. They were right about that as a matter of constitutional law. And the Mormons went and got a jurisdiction themselves.
By moving to Utah.
Oh, yes. And boy, did they want Utah to be a state.
Yes.
Very badly. But even in a jurisdiction such as a territory, it was by no means clear how much power the Congress had over a territory. In fact, their power expanded because of the Mormons. They did stuff to Utah they had never been able to do before. So one of the ways we know that the federal government has what's called plenary power over the territories is that they built a whole legal system for Utah and imposed it on them. Utah had no family law. The Edmunds-Tucker Act directed them to enact family law, right? Adoption, marriage, divorce, recording of marriages. They had none of that.
Well, so, and that's true, because isn't today, when you get married, everybody just knows you have to get a marriage license. But it was because of the Mormons that's now common, right?
No. No. So one of the things that Brigham Young did was really reject, there's something called the common law, and he refused to adopt that. Every other U.S. jurisdiction said, we'll adopt as much of the common law as is suited to a democracy, a democratic republic. And they did that right after the end of the Revolution. They passed what are called reception statutes, and they adopted as much of the English common law as fit. You know, none of that stuff about kings. But Brigham Young said no. No. And then he had the territorial legislature enacted an incorporation for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints with powers that no other corporation had. They just went to town, right? There were no limits on the amount of property they could control. And they had control over marriage. And one of the things that happened in the Protestant Reformation, when we think about Henry VIII and all of that, is that the states took control of marriage away from the churches. Okay. So that was a big nation-building act. The nation-state was in part built on taking control over marriage. So when Brigham Young, you know, said, our church has total control over that, that, you know, that's a real challenge to the way the country had been governed and the way that the modern nation state was created.
Because it was more of a theocracy than a democracy.
Oh, yes. Well, so what, I hope I can qualify that. Is okay. That okay? Because it was also very democratic. People got to consent, but they were told what the will of God was, and they had a choice. So they had agency, and I hear that in Latter-day Saint prayers all the time still. We use our agency to affirm, let us make the right choices, right? This is really important to the religion. So it's not just theocracy. Some people call it theodemocracy. Mm-hmm. Because consent is very important, and you can see it in the 20th century trials, say the raids in Arizona, for example. They would say, you know, but she consented, and the prosecutor would say, but she was 15, and her father told her she had to do this, and so she said yes. That's not consent. In a way, it is. It's someone said yes, and they were believed to have the power to say yes or no. It was a terribly unequal situation. That, you know, that's true. But they were at least asked. You know, I mean, they were, and so I think it's unfair to say that there was no democracy. But it's also unfair to say that it ran like your garden variety democracy, where there was real competition.
Well, yeah, Mormons are known for block voting.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're not alone.
Always have been.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're not alone, and yet they had more political power because they had their own jurisdiction, right? I mean, this is really big stuff. And Brigham Young throughout, you know, right up to the Utah War, spoke as the leader of an independent country and negotiated independently with the British during the Civil War. I mean, so it really was an enormous challenge. There was a much bigger challenge from the South, don't get me wrong, right? But it's true that the national government, you know, they sat up and took notice.
Well, you know, a modern day example, I'm trying to remember, Elisa Wall, are you familiar with her? She was the one that got Warren Jeffs thrown in jail, basically. She spoke at Sunstone in Kirtland a few years ago. Fascinating story. I've been trying to get her on the podcast. She was 15 years old. And the reason I bring this up, because she's about 30 now, so this is a modern-day example. But when you talk about consent, she was 15, and Warren Jeffs told her she had to marry her husband, her cousin, who she hated.
Yes.
And she tells the story where they go to Nevada and they're doing the sealing ceremony, and her mother... because she does not want to say yes. And her mother, she said, squeezed her hand so hard that it hurt. And I almost wanted to break it because she was like, you have to do this, the prophet said. So in our sense, number one, she was 15.
Yeah.
We would not call that consent.
No.
She did say yes, but under great duress.
Right.
And I just wonder how much of that happened in the Arizona Short Creek Raid that you were referring to, or even earlier in the Utah territorial period.
Sure.
So can we really say that that's consent?
We can't say it's full-throated consent, but the idea that marriage is voluntary, the saints accepted that, even for polygamy, where that wasn't always true everywhere. But the idea that someone had to say yes, even that is an advance over how many women were treated for many, many millennia in most countries, right? So yes, that was abuse. And it was parental abuse, it was religious abuse, it was abusive in many, many ways. So I don't want to downplay the harm. But I also don't want to say Utah was a pure theocracy. So I think, you know, there's space there. I remember I was talking to this one guy about different kinds of religious belief. And he said, you know, we really have to, I think he was working on vampires at the time. And he said, you know, we really need this big spectrum because there's religion and there's crazy. And I don't want to say that in this case, but there's really a deeply intentional, thought through approach to radically changing the way we think about the religious meaning of marriage, having a church take it over, take it back from the state, having despairing about the moral capacity of many men, and believing that women will be safer and more godly themselves if they could marry godly men. That's not. I mean, I think that's wrong. I don't believe it, but I can see how it made sense. I can see especially how it made sense in an era of just galloping change and almost endless to a bunch of white people who didn't notice that natives were around, but the idea that you could go somewhere new and you could start over. And you have this incredibly charismatic prophet who's building, like, you just look at him in Nauvoo, he was building and building and building and building. And then you look at Warren Jeffs. What did he ever make? Right?
A mess.
Trouble. Right. So I do think of those as different. And I don't mean to excuse the harm and the abuse in any way. But I do take seriously that this is what Jan Sheps, the great religious studies historian and true pioneer of Mormon studies, she would say, this is a religious tradition and it deserves to be taken seriously. And I think that's a very important lesson. It's the first lesson I got from her book.
Interesting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Sally Gordon. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about a very unpopular decision concerning school prayer.
And it went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. And the Supreme Court said, governments have no business writing prayers. No, this cannot stand. And this was a very, very unpopular decision. 80% of Americans disagreed. Dwight Eisenhower disagreed. For the first time, Catholics disagreed. They had brought most of the anti-school prayers cases before that because the prayers were Protestant. In this one, it was a Jewish rabbi, a Catholic priest, and a Protestant minister sat down. It was prayer by committee. Can you imagine anything less meaningful? Anyway, it was a very unpopular decision.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents for just $5 a month. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/gospeltangents. If you'd like to watch the entire video, you can subscribe at YouTube, Patreon, or on my website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button for just $8 a month. PDF transcripts are just $10 a month, and you can get those on patreon.com/gospeltangents or on my website. I'll send those to you as soon as I've finished completing it. If you'd like to get a paperback and PDF, just subscribe for $20 a month at either Patreon or on my website. Individual paperbacks are available at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can find all of our past interviews there. Show your Gospel Tangents pride by purchasing a t-shirt on our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. You can get our latest updates by friending me at Facebook, or you can also follow our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Become an insider and you can see the newest videos. Follow us on Twitter at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.